Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
3, 2. And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Metz. Today, we have a lot to go over. Kansas had quite the week last week, both men and women on the basketball side, but had a lot of drama over the weekend as well, as Lance Leipold was reportedly the candidate for the Washington job before Jed Fish was able to actually signed with Washington. Tons of stuff to talk about. As usual, Kyle Davis, my deputy editor over Blue Wings Rising, is here to join me. Kyle, how you doing today?
I'm good. I'm cold, but you know, it was a pretty good weekend for Kansas athletics. I mean, you got a sweep in Allen Fieldhouse. You got to retain your football coach after some panic moments on Sunday. It ended up working out well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure you're doing a whole lot better now that Kansas, you know, doesn't have to worry about losing Lance Leipold. And look, I wrote an article over on Blue Wings Rising, kind of what it means, because, you know, from what I was hearing and from what has been, you know, kind of backed up with reporting from a bunch of different people, including Jason Shear, you know, the guy that covers Arizona, that is really like we really, really like him because of all of his stuff during the whole realignment situation. But looking at that, Lance Leipold was the candidate. Like, he was the guy that Washington targeted starting up front. And from what I've heard, and I actually talked about this in the article, is that Lance Leipold, you know, he basically said that, no thanks. Like, they offered him the job. Apparently he was in contact with Kansas for quite a bit of that kind of, I almost want to say it was an unusual, just how aware of what the details were and everything going on that, that Travis Goff and some of the other, people in the Kansas administration were. Like, there was definitely some concern at first when they first started reaching out, because of course, Washington going to the Big Ten can offer a ton of resources. But it became pretty clear, and you know, Mike Vernon and Bryson Stricker over on Twitter were kind of reemphasizing this. But as it got further and further down the line, Kansas was more and more confident that they were keeping Lance Leipold. It's a little weird, right? Having one of the biggest candidates nationwide as your head football coach, if you're a Kansas fan, because it's not something that we're used to.
It's one of those, you know that you're doing something right when, like, a team who was just in the national title game comes calling. Like, that's I think this could be, I think this is probably, while it was a stressful few hours on Sunday, this is probably the best case scenario for Kansas, in that, like, hey, they have a program on the rise with a coach that everyone is, his name gets popped up all over the place, whether seriously or not. Like, this one was serious. You know, it seems like every single list of, and there's a job opening, every single list has, you know, Lance Leipold on there. Same thing with a couple of, like, Matt Campbell seems to always be on there as well and whatnot. But this one was legitimate. And, can you imagine saying that, let alone, 2 or 3 years ago, that that the Kansas coach would turn down Washington. But when you look at it with on just like its face value, the context of the situation, like it makes sense why he stayed. Washington is one losing its quarterback, starting running back, its two top receivers, members of its offensive line. Like this seems like a TCU type situation where you are in the national title game. Everyone goes to the draft at the mass exodus, and then the next year you are not nearly the same team, and you're struggling to make a bowl game. And if you look at Washington's schedule, not only they're going to the Big Ten, but I don't know if you've seen their schedule yet. Just a couple of them running down: Washington State in the non-con, and you go Northwestern, who's a bowl team; Rutgers, who was a bowl team; Michigan, obviously the reigning national champions. Iowa, who can't throw the ball more than 2 yards down the field, but they play great defense. Then you end the year with USC at Penn State, UCLA at Oregon. That is brutal. Like if you have everyone back, it's a brutal schedule. And so this very well might be a Washington team that maybe like goes 6-6 here or is somewhere around that. That wouldn't be shocking. And now you look on the flip side, you have a Kansas Jayhawks team who's bringing back 8 of 11 starters on offense from one of the most dynamic ones. You have Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12. You have Arizona coming in, but now a double whammy for Kansas in benefits. Like their coach just took the Washington job. So now Arizona is on the rise, but now without a coach. Kansas has a realistic shot. The schedule is favorable when you look at it. And from a Big 12 standpoint of who they get, they miss Utah during the regular season. Things are high with Kansas right now. And so if you look at it purely from just a like job situation standpoint, unless you the Pacific Northwest is not exactly a recruiting hotbed either. Not to say Lawrence, Kansas is, but you're a little more centralized. You're closer to Texas. You've got some of those other things there. So unless you just want to go live in Seattle and coach football, which listen, hey, if you're going to pay me $7 million a year to go live in Seattle and coach football, like, sure, that sounds great. I'm not trying to knock it. I'm just saying that it's almost ridiculous to say that, like, when you just look at the pure on paper comparisons of these two jobs heading into next year, the Kansas job makes a lot of sense of why you would stay. And that's just something that, like, it was almost impossible to fathom 18 months ago, 3 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever, like how much you want to go in. It's great day. And I know we're going to get into this more. I don't want to just ramble the whole time, but like, I think the athletic department deserves a lot of credit for this, because even if you would have taken the job, you could not have said, well, okay, you should have done more. Like Kansas has done everything to put football on the map. You know?
They knocked down half the stadium for him.
Right.
I mean, really what it comes down to is Lance Leipold is a program builder, right? And I think it's fair to say he has not finished building the Kansas program to where he wants to. I also think that, like, you know, when he was at Buffalo, I don't think he got Buffalo back to where he wanted him to be, but he definitely put them in a much better situation than they were when he arrived. And so, you know, I think that, you know, I wouldn't blame him if he decided he wanted to go to Washington and build the program there. But if you're talking about it, like, Washington has a bigger cachet name right now nationally, especially since they just went, you know, and were the national runners up. But I don't know that the program foundationally is significantly different from where Kansas is right now. Right. Like if you go back to when Leipold came to Kansas, there's some big stark differences. I saw some people drawing parallels. It's like, oh, he'd go to Washington on a big stage with Big Ten money and do the same sort of thing with a same sort of situation as when he took over Kansas. I don't think it's the same situation at all. Right. Like when you came to Kansas, Lance Leipold had the opportunity and the ability, one, to retain a bunch of staff that would allow him to keep a lot of the players that he had. They had players that had tons of eligibility left that they could keep and they could sell on the consistency that he was going to bring. You can't do that at Washington. Washington's losing so many guys through the draft. Like there's nothing you can do. There's not any consistency from 1 year to the next. He does not have a huge stable of talent that he can build on and he can mold and turn into guys that can be competitive nationally. I think here at Kansas, he's finally taken those guys and turned them into guys that can compete nationally with a bunch of other guys. I mean, we saw that with, you know, Kobe Bryant and Melo Dotson, you know, grading out better on Pro Football Focus than every other major cornerback that was, you know, potentially going in the NFL draft this year. So,
and he's crushing it in the recruiting,
right?
Both in the transfer, getting guys like kids from Iowa State who were playing really well want to come to Kansas now, which, you know, would have been the opposite probably 5 years ago.
Right, right. So, I mean, he definitely still has plenty of room here. I think it would be different if, you know, Kansas was coming off of a Big 12 title and, you know, like a bunch of stuff where Kansas had gotten to a point where you feel good that Travis Goff could hire someone that could continue to build it. But Travis Goff doesn't, or Lance Leipold doesn't strike me as a guy who likes to leave a job half complete to go on to a better job. I do think that there is an opportunity he potentially could leave. And look, if Harbaugh goes to, you know, the NFL and Michigan says, we'll pay you $12 million a year to come up to Michigan, I think it's a conversation. I don't know if he would actually take it just because of all the pressure that happens with Michigan. But, like, that's the kind of job, that's like a destination job, right? Like Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia now, you know, Texas. I think those are kind of the jobs that if you are an ambitious head football coach, which I don't know that Lance Leipold has the same kind of ambition as some of the guys that would take those jobs, but
maybe especially at his age now, like right. his stage in his career too. You know, but if he was 40,
but I think what I'm trying to say, cover, then, like yeah. right, like what I'm trying to say though is, if Michigan were to open up tomorrow, and Lance Leipold was the number one, you know, target for that, I wouldn't blame him for leaving. I don't know that he necessarily would though, and the fact that that's even a conversation, the fact that you know. You can get those kind of job offers and not immediately jump at them tells you one, how far Kansas has come, and two, how high the expectations are for Lance Leipold himself of what he can still do with this team. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what they're able to do. The fact that they held on to him, you know, there's another extension raise coming from what I've heard. There's a ton of stuff kind of going on behind the scenes. Kansas, as you said, has put a huge commitment into football. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. I find it funny now that Kansas and Kansas State probably have two of the top, you know, five candidates for pretty much every job nationally for quite a long time now. So we'll see how long Klieman and Leipold stick around. I think that Leipold has a better chance of sticking around a lot longer than Klieman just because Klieman's so much younger and has an opportunity, I think, to go to some of those other jobs long term that you know, are really, really hard to turn down. So.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, like you mentioned, Mike Vernon's been all over this for a while and others have talked about it. The Bill Self new contract and raise kind of opened the door to it was right. the worst kept secret around Lawrence. That's like, okay, we know we probably can't pay our football coach as much as our basketball coach, but we're going to bump him up and then we're going to get Lance where he needs to be. And, you know, it's interesting, like the Jed Fish is getting a little under $8 million a year for the Washington job. So I don't know, you know, I think it's at 7.75 a year is what it came out to. I would imagine, I'm curious to see, you know, I imagine they probably offered Lance about the same.
I mean, Leipold's contract right now is $5.25 million a year. Like, he's already right, making quite see, a bit.
and I could see with this restructured deal and, like, you know, like football is the moneymaker. Like, that's where your revenue comes from. Like, and then the last 2 years, it's not like, you know, I'm not trying to say Kansas football is now Ohio State in terms of revenue or Texas. But, like, when you think about even just going from, you know, 10,000 people in the stands to selling out, you know, six of eight games. Like, there's a lot of extra revenue. I could see Goff and them easily getting him to $7.5-8 million there and matching that. And when you talk about, you could be the one to, I would imagine he would probably want to see this brand new stadium get open and be the one on the sidelines there to see the kind of the the finish of that. And like, you know, it's one of those things where he could be, he already is kind of like a legend around here in terms of what he's been able to do and being able to see that out. Like, he could be the guy. And that's an interesting thing in a couple points, because one, like, again, Washington, if you look at it in their new, in their position in the new Big Ten, like they are a relevant brand, but they're not top four. I mean, you put Ohio State, Michigan, USC and Oregon way above them, right, as a football brand. So you're always, and Penn State is probably in there in that running too. So you're, and then you have, you know, UCLA, like, you're fighting for relevance there as like one of the top brands there. And I think it's interesting, and this is where I give all of the credit to the Kansas Athletics group and Travis Goff and even the fans, is that the one thing that I saw of like, hey, here's why he would maybe go, is because like, if he, you know, wanted to go to a quote unquote football school and not be second fiddle to Kansas or to basketball. But I do think there is a difference between the schools that are in, that are all in on football, and basketball is an afterthought, and you see it in terms of like the facilities and everything else. Or same thing with, you know, like basketball being number one and football being kind of an afterthought in terms of facilities and NIL and the amount they're going to pay their coaches and all that kind of stuff. Like, that hasn't been Kansas. Now, obviously, basketball is always going to be number one. But when you talk about the investments from the stadium, his contract, his assistants, NIL, fan support that we've gotten from selling out on the bowl games and selling out the stadium, like, it's never going to surpass basketball. And I think he knows that, but it's also not like an irrelevant thing that people don't, it's not like people don't care if you lose in October because basketball's a month away. Like, that happens at some school. That's a real thing. And there are certain situations
it used
where
to happen here. So
it used to happen here when you were bad. But I'm saying, even like if you're a competent team, like now Michigan's a disaster in basketball right now, but even when they're like competent, like, you can see Hunter Dickinson. He came there because basically there was no NIL. He was kind of a second class figure in there. Whereas you look at like Jalen Daniels, he is a star here. And I think there's a lot of nuance here. And I think that's one of the things that I give the administration and athletics as a whole and the fans a lot of credit for, is that football is not a second class citizen here. Now, basketball is never probably going to be top because of the history, tradition. You have the inventor of the game as your first head coach. Rules of basketball literally live in Lawrence. But I think Leipold has, they've done everything they can, and they've really shown that, like, this is not you're not going to be overshadowed here, and you can carve out your own. And there's room for both. And I think they're going to show that in the contracts, that there's room for both him and Bill to be among the highest paid coaches. Obviously, the stadium, the facilities, the locker room, NIL, like, Kansas has hit it out of the park and made it so that, there's a lot of reasons you pointed out why Lance would want to stay, but I think Kansas also made it. Like, they could have missed a lot of the stuff and made it easy for him to leave.
Oh, yeah.
They basically did everything they needed to make this a really hard decision and make it some really valid points on why he should stay.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, bad ADs. Like, we've talked about it multiple times here. Lou Perkins, for all the good things that he did, he made just as many, I think, mistakes in terms of the way that he interacted with his coaches, and he made it difficult for a lot of them to stay the way that they, probably should have, but felt like they could have. And so, and then Shane Zinger was great with coaches, but unfortunately, some of the other stuff wasn't so great. I think we finally have a competent AD who is able to do his job and do it well enough that people want to stick around. But I think, to your point, like, back when I was on campus, in the middle to late 2000s, Ohio State was absolutely huge in both basketball and football. And so one of the big questions, and this was also like when Florida was really good at basketball and football with Billy Donovan, and the question was, can you be a two-sport school, right? Can you have both a good football and a good basketball team? And I think what we found was, sure, the basketball teams were good for a little while, but football was still king on all of those campuses. And so I think football is able to bring in enough revenue, and if you can get the football program set up, it can run itself to the, to the point where you can have a good enough program that they can be competitive and be up towards the top of football. Basketball is not the same way. You have to have a basketball mindset, I think, to keep basketball up, because one player can have such a huge difference, right, on how good your roster is. And so it's a lot harder once you've built that momentum. It's a lot easier to lose it in basketball than it is in football. Now, granted, Kansas had a long way to go and has a long way to go still, I think, to get themselves football-wise where they need to be. But, back when Mangino was here, like, football – looked like it was in a really good spot, going to the Orange Bowl, and it looked like everything was going great. But, basketball, well, I think really what it comes down to is, if there is a school that can long-term be really good at football and really good at basketball, it's going to have to be a place like Kansas, where basketball is the main focus. You make sure that that is, that is taken care of, but you still have plenty of support for football. There's tons of football fans that really want this Kansas football team to do well. I mean, friend of the podcast, former, when I was over at Rock Chalk Talk, Mike Plank, he is probably the biggest football fan that I have ever met. And there's tons of those guys. Like, Bryson Stricker is, he's a football insider. As he said several times, he doesn't care about basketball pretty much at all. He's a football guy. There's plenty of those football guys that are really excited about what's happening here in Lawrence. And I'm excited for them. I love football as well. I also, I think basketball is probably my favorite sport, but I love football enough that I am very happy to see this. And I do think it's going to be absolutely huge for the university going forward. But I think, to your point, like, you look at, the amount of revenue that the different schools brought in, and obviously teams like Baylor and TCU that are private schools don't necessarily have to report this, the same way. But from everything I could tell, it was, you know, you talk about the top earning programs in the last like 5 years, right? It's Texas, Oklahoma, and then Kansas in the Big 12. And that's with an awful football team. Imagine what that's going to be like when the football team is clicking under Leipold. You know, Kansas is looking to be the big dog in terms of money spent or money, you know, I guess brought in the Big 12, which is going to help them compete in the conference in both sports. So I'm looking forward to what we can do here. You know, I think it helps that Bill Self, like a lot of props need to go to Bill Self because, you know, we saw what happened down in Kentucky, right? When Kentucky football team started getting good and they started talking about stuff, John Calipari's, you know, comments were, you know, this is always going to be a basketball school, which kind of caused a little bit of animosity between the two teams, between the two coaches. Bill Self's not like that. He did make the joke, right, you know, on College Game Day last year, how, like, Kansas is always going to be a basketball school and a football school moving forward, or, you know, to that effect. Like, he's more than willing to poke fun at it. He's more than willing to talk about it. There is definitely an acknowledgement from everybody involved that basketball, like you said, is always going to be king at Kansas just because of their place in the history of college basketball. But there's plenty of room at the top, especially with Bill Self running the show. There's plenty of room for football to come and join them as a huge contributor, bringing in a ton more money and making it a whole lot easier for this entire athletic department to be successful. All right. Any final thoughts about Leipold, coaching, football, all that fun stuff?
No, I think that, you know, the future's bright. And while it was a bit of a scare, I also think that the amount of buzz and the panic that you saw from at least the online faction of Kansas fans, like, also shows the commitment. Like, this was not a, oh, well, like, kind of thing. This was a, you know, there's a lot of passion here for Kansas football, which I think reanimated. And if you want to, you want to have a little just entertainment, like, take 5 minutes. And if you saw, like, so basically Leipold squashed the rumors for good with a tweet that went out right about, or I guess an X post, I don't know, whatever
a
it
tweet.
Is now.
It's always a tweet.
It's a tweet, yeah. Basically saying, you know, the guys come back on campus tomorrow. Can't wait to get back to work with them in 24, rock chalk. Go just read some of the replies on there. There's, it's a good way to spend 5 minutes and just kind of have a laugh. So, yes, I think.
I do find it hilarious how many K-State fans wanted to crow about the fact that Leipold might have been leaving when a lot of rumors were flying about Klieman also leaving, and they were just as in just as much disbelief about them, you know, about Klieman leaving as Kansas fans were about Leipold leaving. Actually, I would say Kansas fans probably were a little bit more worried about Leipold leaving because Kansas fans are not used to having nice things in football that last. You know, they're always waiting for the other shoe to drop, and thankfully, I think we're coming out of that. But yeah, I was not expecting to spend, you know, the first 20 minutes of the podcast talking about football, but hey, we did it. That was huge news. I'm so glad that we get to keep Leipold. There's tons of basketball stuff to talk about, though. Much like the tons of basketball stuff that just dropped over at sponsor here on the podcast, the Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage clothing company based right here in Kansas City. They want you to be one of the best dressed fans this season. They have tons of vintage collegiate gear for more than 30 different schools. They're continuing to add stuff all the time, but they've got all the greats in the Big 12. They've got a ton of stuff. They just dropped a whole brand new line of shirts and hoodies and other great stuff for all the teams in the Big 12, including Kansas. My absolute favorite shirt on the site right now is not an NIL shirt. It's not any of that. It's the brand new Kansas one that just dropped. It's a retro video game style one that says Level Up. It's a Kansas basketball specific shirt. It is fantastic. I highly recommend you guys head over there and grab it if you have not already. If you have the ability to do it, you will not be disappointed. They have some really fantastic new hoodies as well for every team in the conference. But the Kansas one is absolutely fire as well. So, man, I sound like one of my teenagers saying that. But look, this is great stuff. I highly recommend you guys go over there and get it. Use promo code 101215. That's TEN1215. You can get 15% off of all non-sale items. That does include all of the new stuff that just dropped. I don't believe any of it's on sale right now as of the last time that I looked. So you can use that to go ahead and get that discount on all of that great new gear. And that is a whenever you want type of promo code. There's not a first time buyer or, you know, one time only or anything like that. Go and use that to get a bunch of gear for a whole bunch of different people. You will not regret it. Again, charliehustle.com. Promo code 101215. Get 15% off of all non-sale items. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. All right. I do want to talk about the women. Actually, let's go ahead and do that here before the break, because that won't be quite as long of a conversation, and then we can jump into the men. But look, the women had probably about as good of a week as you could hope for after the 0-3 start to Big 12 conference play. They had a huge upset. Tyana Jackson got to 1,000 points on her career. In that game, you had Holly Kirschgeeter, you had Smaya Nichols, you had a ton of different players go off against Baylor. Kansas beating Baylor by 21 points on Wednesday. The first Big 12 loss for Baylor of the year. The first time that Kansas has beaten Baylor in like 16 attempts, I believe it was. Just all kinds of great stuff for the Jayhawks. Finally beating Baylor, finally getting over the hump, and finally putting together the type of performance that we were expecting to see from this team all along.
Yeah, like it was obviously certainly an upset. And even the Oklahoma State game was a good kind of validation of like, we've been expecting this from this team. Like even earlier in the season when they dropped those really close games like Virginia Tech and UConn and some of those other stumbles, it's like, man, we know this team has the talent. They just haven't been able to put it together as well. And like, it was great to see four starters in double figures in both of those games. And they were actually, a different combination of them. It was great to see Tyana Jackson just have one of her monster, just dominant games against Baylor. And Samaya Nichols has been fantastic. 39 points in the week. Like she is now, I think, the leading scorer on the team. She's really coming into her own. It's nice to see. Those were two performances that like it feels like we've been just waiting all year to see from this group because we knew it was possible. It wasn't one of those things where it completely came out of the blue. Now maybe beating Baylor by as much as they did at home was surprising just because Baylor, you don't typically upsets over top five teams are one thing, a complete smackdown of 20 points is another thing. But we've known that this group has had it in them the whole time. And it's nice that it really feels like it's coming together and there's a lot of conference play left too, which is what the good thing is. Like you can see, like if they can just, now the question is, can you maintain this and can you hold on to this kind of production and play that we knew they were capable of? Now they're showing signs. Now the question is, because again, it's been consistency all year. What's the next week look like? Can you replicate this to a degree and not have that stumble that we've seen earlier in the year?
Yeah, I mean, and it's weird too, though, because I would almost argue that the Oklahoma State win was probably the bigger win of the two. Yes, it was absolutely fantastic to be able to just completely demolish Baylor. But what we've seen from this team, right, they've been very competitive against really top-tier teams. They were competitive against UConn, against Virginia Tech down in the Cayman Islands. They were competitive against Penn State on the road, who is a much better team than I think a lot of people thought coming into the year. They were competitive against Texas A&M as well. Like, they have been in there. The question is, can they, in an instance where they have to fight back, right? Because I think the biggest thing between all those games is that Kansas getting down, early in those games, kind of having a decent game but not quite enough and getting behind late and not being able to catch all the way back up. We saw that against Oklahoma State as well, and it felt like it was trending in that same direction, right? Like they were going to make a big push. They were going to do a lot of the things they needed to. They were going to get close, but was it going to be just enough? And they had a huge – it was like a 16-2 run or something like that that spanned the end of the third quarter and the beginning of the fourth quarter, which allowed them to kind of take the lead and take control of the game, something that we hadn't really seen from them. And I do think that, it's also, I think, beneficial to see, Tyana Jackson out, and they were able to somewhat hold their own against Oklahoma State. But I think those are kind of the biggest issues, right, left, is, like, can Kansas break momentum from other teams, especially when they're actually shooting okay from three-point range? Oklahoma State didn't shoot well the entire game, but they definitely shot well for good portion of the games, and Kansas was able to stay close. And can they kind of get that extra push that they need? And they did that against Oklahoma State. So I'm excited to see what this team is moving forward. They have some really, we will get to know right away if this is something that they're going to be able to sustain, because they go on the road on Tuesday to Texas, and then they go on the road to Kansas State this weekend. So two gigantic games for them coming up on the road. If they can get one of those, I think I feel really good about what they have moving forward and the ability. But then they also turn around and host Iowa State next week in the middle of the week. So lots of difficult games. But this is the Big 12. Like, this is the Big 12 women's conference that is just as difficult, I think, from top to bottom as the men's side, with maybe just a few exceptions. I think some of the new teams are struggling women's-wise. But I think for the most part, though, this is just as strong a conference as it's ever been. And I think that there's plenty of opportunities for Kansas to show what they're able to do. There's still a chance for Kansas to actually have the kind of season that they were expecting to have. It just seems like they took a detour. All right. Anything else about the women?
No, I think it was good to see some of those, some of the milestones being hit. And yeah, I think you could still make an argument that, like the men, you would like a little bit more from the bench. The women haven't been exactly deep necessarily, but right now it's that starting five has been good enough to hang with anybody.
There's been decent injuries. You have like Paris Gaines, I believe, is out with an injury of some sort. I don't really have a lot of details about it, but she had been coming in and providing some extra depth in the down low in the post. You have Danai Papadopoulou, who plays fairly well. When she comes in, though, they go from looking for a lot of scoring down low from Tyana Jackson to just like rebounding, controlling the ball, trying to make sure that they can play good defense and get those kind of contributions that way, which is good, like they can do that. But you do lose a very significant offensive dynamic for the team when Papadopoulou's in there, just because Jackson is that good of a player and that good offensively. So, there's still definitely some work to be done to try to make sure that they can avoid that big of a drop off. But there's not a whole lot you can do when you just don't have another big player that can play, most of the way the same way that Jackson can. So you have a lot of players that I think have a lot of energy that can do a lot of different things. And I'm excited to kind of see some more from like Leia Canessa, some of the other, freshmen that are coming in that are starting to get some more minutes, getting more comfortable in what they're doing. So we'll have to see how they get to contribute, but really looking forward to the rest of the season for this women's team. Was happy to be in the field house for that particular game. But we are going to go ahead and jump over to the men here. But before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're back. I am here with Kyle Davis, my deputy editor over Blue Wings Rising. We, of course, are talking about the fantastic weekend for the Jayhawks. But I don't think we can start talking about the men without talking about what that, I think the best way to describe it is the debacle against UCF, on Wednesday. I have two main takeaways, I think, from here. One, Kansas does not have the ability to dial back on their energy and still expect to be able to beat anybody in this league. And two, I think the UCF defense is a whole lot better than people gave them credit for. They were ranked, 25th in KenPom coming into the game. I think a lot of people, myself included,
up to 17th now.
Yeah, I was to say, I think a lot of people, myself included, kind of thought maybe they built that up based off of the, not great offenses that they played in the non-conference. Turns out, no, that's definitely legitimate because they did a very similar thing to BYU, who is a really good offensive team as well. UCF is a team that, while I don't think they're going to be in the top half of the conference before the end of the year because of their, offensive issues, they have a defense that in any particular night is going to make it very difficult, especially when you have to go down to Orlando. So, Kansas is going to going to have to wear that one for a little while. But I think, anything else that you take away from that UCF game?
Road games in the Big 12 are just brutal. You even look at, Oklahoma State is 0-3. And yet, in the first game of the conference play, they took Baylor to overtime at home. that's a 3-0 team versus an 0-3 team that very easily could have gone another way. I think, if you're wanting to look at silver linings, and you're right. So, two things. One, UCF, again, there is now becoming a very specific kind of style that is giving Kansas fits. It's the Achilles heel. It's the very aggressive, speed you up, creating steals type of defense where then on offense, they are very aggressive at just pounding to the basket and drawing fouls and trying to get high percentage shots. Marquette, TCU, UCF, like you've seen it. That's what it is. TCU or UCF is also excellent at blocking shots. Like that's one of the, again, I think that is probably, you know, one of the better defenses in terms of that type of style hurts Kansas. The other thing is that if you want to go silver lining, like that was the wake up call that might have been needed because Kansas had been getting away with some of this lackadaisicalness, maybe. Like we talked about it in the TCU game. We talked about it in some other, like that would just like the awareness was down, the kind of getting beat to 50-50 balls, the just the poor passing, the lack of execution on offense. Like that, I think might have been the wake up call that they needed. Cause again, you know, this is a very common thing. Bill Self has said it a lot of times. It's kind of hard to get through to your guys that they're not playing well when they keep winning. And, you know, it's one thing when that happens. It's another thing when you go and get court stormed on the road against a team that, you know, is unranked. And so I think that was one of those that obviously we saw some change with Johnny Furphy entering the starting lineup. And I think we'll get to that probably with the Oklahoma game. But also, you know, Hunter Dickinson played his worst game. You could tell he, but not only was he in foul trouble, but the knee that came out afterwards that he banged knees in the TCU game was not 100%. It literally looked like they could not hold onto the ball. The ball just kept flying out of their hands. Like McCullough was rough on that. I mean, you can't have your starters turning the ball over that much. It looked like they had never practiced against the zone before. UCF zone and their length just really bothered them. So I think, yeah, that's a very clear style of a team that is going to give Kansas problems. And I think, you know, you don't want to take losses, you in the conference, you know, I think Kansas's goal right now still is to win at home all or maybe all but one and, you know, only drop maybe four on the road or something like that. And so I think that's still doable. And it did seem like, as we'll get to it, the Oklahoma game, like the wake up call worked because a lot of the issues that we saw against UCF were much improved against the Sooners. And I know it's a different kind of defense and a different kind of team, but also like Oklahoma is still, you know, capable, that's still a top 21 defense. And they still are decent at turning teams over and whatnot. So I think, you know, it's not like you're playing, and it's also just a top 10 team. It's not like you're going from UCF to, you know, Eastern Illinois or something. I don't know. But so I think I think we saw that the wake-up call worked in a lot of ways. Now the question is, can you keep it going?
Yeah, and you want to talk about silver linings. Like, I think it was a huge silver lining that is probably the most – the bloodiest blood week of all that we've ever seen in college basketball in a long time. Of the top –
First time since, I think, 92, that
eight of the top 10 teams in college basketball in the AP poll went on the road and lost to an unranked team this week. So while you could potentially make the argument that Kansas's loss to UCF is the worst of the bunch, it kind of gets lost, I think, in the shuffle of a lot of the other ones. And, you know, I mean, you can look at UCF, you can look at what they bring. And honestly, I think the only reason that the UCF loss is considered as bad as it is, because that's the name on the jersey, is UCF. Like if it had been, you know, if it had been going on the road to like an Oklahoma State, if it had been going on the road to, you know, a team like Iowa State or something like that, like those would not have been considered bad losses at all. Now, granted, I do think that Iowa State's better than UCF this year, but you know, I think they're in a similar sort of boat where their offense is, or I should say their defense is significantly ahead of their offense in terms of the ability to compete at the top of the Big 12. But I don't think that anybody is going to hold it against Kansas come to the end of the year. Like this is going to be a, oh my gosh, you know, we're fine. Like at the end of the, it was a momentary blip that most people aren't really going to care about. Like the only way
ask Houston how it's going on the road right now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, and I saw a lot of Houston fans that were upset about, you know, Kansas fans and, well, I mean, everybody basically saying, you know, welcome to the Big 12. It's like, yeah, I mean, that's a factual statement, right? Like, yes, you could say that Houston probably wasn't prepared or isn't prepared to face as many tough teams on the road back to back to back as they have been. But that's true of anybody coming up to a conference like the Big 12. I mean, that's going to be true for like Colorado coming in next year, right? Like,
yeah, it wasn't a shot at Houston. It was a shot at media members and committee members who would validate beating bad teams in an easier schedule versus quality wins. Like, it's so like it's still people bitter about the seeding last year and Houston getting a higher seed, even though, you know, like, basically, yeah, it was not a Houston thing. It's no one has, I don't think anyone in Lawrence really thinks that much about Houston, like, for better or worse. It's a, yeah, right. You insert any mid-major, like, it was, this was the Wichita State thing before this. This is in Gonzaga's life for, you know, if Gonzaga joined the Pac-12 3 years ago, although the Pac-12 is just absolutely brutal. So maybe that's they joined the Big Ten in basketball, maybe, let's say, like, this same thing would have happened. Cause yeah, you're not prepared for this many fights in a row. It's one thing to have a big game every 2 weeks and then having, you know, a team ranked in the 200s and KenPom in between. But to do this and have a rock fight every single time, you're going to get God. And that's kind of life at a power conference.
Yeah, I mean, that's really just the way it is. Like, Kansas, or, you know, the Big 12 has four teams that are ranked 100 or higher, with UCF being the lowest at KenPom at 189. But they have nobody, you know, in the high 200s, which you can't say that about any of the other leagues. Just top to bottom, they have a ridiculous schedule. It was, you know, tweeted out the, I forget which ESPN personality actually tweeted it out, but hey, guess what? Of the 16 teams, like, the 16 hardest remaining schedules for the rest of the year in college basketball, how many do you want to guess are in the Big 12?
14.
Yeah, it really is. You know, the only other ones are, there's Michigan, and then I believe it was Indiana. Like, there's two Big Ten teams, essentially. Wow. But, like, yeah. Michigan's at, like, number 9, I believe, and then Indiana, I think, is at 15. So, yeah, top 16, all the Big 12 schools are in there. It's just, it's such a gauntlet. It's so ridiculous. It is going to be... It's going to be a rock fight. And like you said, you know, like, I wouldn't be shocked if the winner of the conference has 6 losses in conference. That's how brutal this is. And actually, I mean, you look right now, Baylor is projected to be 12-6 in the conference with their 3-0 start and winning the conference.
Don't get me started on KenPom's Big 12 projections.
No, that's fine. But I do believe, well, ESPN's projection, because in that same graphic, they had a projection saying that Houston had a 73.9% chance of winning the conference. So projections don't really know what to do with these teams because of how strong all of them are. And, you know, normally you can take a conference race down to, you know, one or two key games, right, for most of these conferences. In the Big 12, you could have a two-game stretch against two of the worst teams in the conference that could completely decide who's going to win this conference and by how many games. It's impossible, I think, to take a model with any kind of accuracy and use it to think about, or to, you know, to say who's going to win the conference. Cause it's just, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Especially this early when you have, like, take, you know, Texas Tech, no disrespect to Texas Tech, but the first three games are Texas, Oklahoma State, and K-State. We don't really know what to do with them. We're going to find out pretty soon. Like, right now, KenPom has Texas Tech ahead of Kansas by a game finishing the year, which I think they have Kansas tied for 7th at 10-8, which I would be shocked if that happens. But you'll see, like,
I am looking actually here. I was looking. I forgot that this is sorted by current conference records. So, yeah, Houston is also projected to win at KenPom at 13-5. But, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Texas Tech, though, the next here's just basically through the first week in February, at Houston, home to BYU, at Oklahoma, at TCU, home to Cincinnati, at Baylor. You are lucky to go 500 in that schedule. That is absolutely brutal. And so, you know, like, I think that we're going to see some wild adjustments from the first three games to even the, you know, the beginning of February and then the beginning of March. It's going to look wildly different. And again, it's one of those things, who can withstand these losses and, you know, not let it become 2-3. And especially when you have to go on the road, because they can compile pretty quickly. And there's just, you look at any team in the Big 12, there's a 2 week stretch where it's just like, wow, we play 4 teams in the top 20 in KenPom, or we're going to play, you know, 3 ranked teams in 4 games or whatever. Like, those just how you can do in those stretches will depend on how high you finish on there. But yeah, I do agree with Kim Pom that I think five losses probably wins it, maybe four. I just don't see, I would be shocked if Kansas finished at 10-8, especially after what we saw on Saturday, where they completely fixed a lot of the issues and had one of their most complete best performances ever, which in part was due to Johnny Furphy getting into the starting lineup. And then I was still happy to see a Marco Jackson play well and better than he has of late coming off the bench, maybe with some of that pressure getting taken off of him. So I think maybe Kansas has found its starting lineup, which, again, as we look at this going forward, sure as heck helps things, especially when you have a part of the schedule over the next week or two that is favorable to get some wins if you can continue playing well.
Yeah, I mean, just final point about that schedule that you're talking about, like Texas Tech, those next six games, if you look at the win expectancies over on KenPom, they're only expected to win just a little over two of those. So yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Like, this is the way that KenPom gets their projected records is basically just adding up all the win percentages, you know, and which I understand, like, that's what you want to do in a model sense. But I do think that there's definitely some room for interpretation, right, of, you know, how accurate is that likely to be. I do think that the unbalanced schedule does a lot of this as well, makes it difficult, or a lot more difficult, I think, than it has been in the past to really predict, because it's not only going to be, like, the timing of when do you hit teams, but now it's which teams do you actually get to play and where do you get to play them. And so, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. But let's go ahead and jump into this Oklahoma game, because, like you said, lots of changes to the lineups, lots of changes to the way that Kansas played. And, man, what a game that was. Kansas, you know, going into the half, only up by a single point, 38-37. And, you know, turning it on, though, in that second half and really kind of doing whatever it was that they wanted to do at that point to pull away in this game. I want to ask you, though, because I saw two different players, I thought, that had a ton of energy in that first half that really kind of set the tone for everything. In Johnny Furphy and KJ Adams, which one of those do you think had the biggest impact on the way that Kansas played the rest of the game?
I think it was probably Adams, but I think that Furphy, the box score is not going to reflect his efforts and his impact on the game, because he's one of those guys who just, he's all over. He's getting up to speed, like he's playing at that speed. He's making the right decision a lot of the time. But Adams was just a complete beast. And this kind of, I think the other reason I would slightly go to Adams is because we said this, I was, you know, driving into the game, listening to the pregame show, and Curtis Townsend was on the radio and saying that the emphasis for Kansas early is just to get inside, like pound the paint, get to the post, like go to work. And if you look at it, they got out to a 12-4 lead, with eight of those points coming in the paint. And then the other 4 points were two KJ Adams free throws and a KJ Adams jumper. And he was just, again, a beast everywhere, crashing the boards. He and Dickinson kind of traded off times there. If the game ended at halftime, KJ Adams is your MVP. He struggled a bit in the second half. But still, I do think so. From just a pure production, I still think I have to give it to Adams. But I will say that Furphy's role in the starting lineup, like, it feels like he just knows how to play with the other four guys out there really well and fits in so seamlessly, like a puzzle piece that was missing. And again, he makes good passes. He stands in the right spot. Obviously, we know that he can shoot the three, but also just kind of getting to the rim. The refs, man, they love to call fouls on him that I don't know if other players are getting. Maybe it's just a freshman thing.
Yeah, I don't know if my tweet in the middle of that. It's like the refs must have all gotten together at some point, had a summit that decided that Johnny Furphy can't play defense without fouling, because you look
at... Yeah, like, I don't know if we need fouls. Can we get an Australian ambassador on the call to figure out, yeah, like, have a sync with the big deal? Because, yeah, I just think... That was no fault of his, but yes, I think him in the starting lineup, again, just the way he fits works so well. And then I like that. I think that took a little bit of pressure off of Marco Jackson, because, you know, Jackson didn't commit a turnover in this game. There's only two. It was this new program record of only two turnovers in the game for Kansas after 18 against UCF. We talked about this in the preview, like, Oklahoma had had only two games this year where it had less than 10 turnovers. Kansas had only had three. The lowest in the season before this point was seven against Kansas City. And then you ended with only two turnovers, and Oklahoma had 11. Like, that was a huge difference. It's amazing how even this was Kansas's worst three-point shooting game of the year from a percentage standpoint. They only shot 20%. And yet you score almost 80 points, and you score 1.16 points per possession. And the reason you do that is because you're not turning the ball over. You have more chances. And they were pounding it inside. Dickinson was just going to work, you know, using over both shoulders. I liked McCullough's aggressiveness in the second half getting to the line, because he still didn't – I don't know if we've – I think this is a little bit of a maybe a midseason slump for him. He hasn't had the best couple of games, especially shooting the ball. Kevin hasn't. Like, he's – his numbers look better because he's been getting to the line that much. But, yeah, I think
I think some of that's misleading, right? Because he's been getting to the line so much, and there's been so many times where he drives in and gets absolutely hammered on a play that probably would have been a made layup, right? So, like, if instead of those 10...
I was thinking more outside shooting has been slump. And, and even the turnovers and everything, like, he just hasn't looked himself, but you give him credit because he is doing such a good job attacking the basket and getting to the line that he's a huge asset there. And I'm saying, like, I think the outside shots and, like, him just, like, you know, some of those picking guys off the dribble one-on-one, turnaround jumpers like that were falling in November and December just aren't there right now. And so I think it's one of those things where he's going to get back to, he's going to have a game here I think where that all clicks again.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm worried about any kind of long-term prospect for any of the top four guys. Dwan Harris getting a three in this game. You know, I was really hoping that he would get those final 3 points we needed to get to 10. Cause I love that stat about Kansas being undefeated when he scores 10 and Bill Self is coaching. But, no, I mean, he had 8 assists. It was just a really clean game, I think, for a lot of the Jayhawks. You know, it was funny because we actually asked Hunter Dickinson in the press conference at the end, you know, like, what are your thoughts about Kansas only having two turnovers? And he was like, yeah, makes me upset that I was one of them. Like, the fact that this team is really, you know, that bought in on trying to eliminate turnovers and holding themselves accountable and responsible for what's going on is great to see. But I also think that, like, you look at what Dwan Harris – I'm sorry. You look at – you know, you talked about KJ Adams kind of falling off a little bit in the second half. I don't even necessarily think it was him falling off. I think it was just that, you know, he was the guy that was open. He was the guy that was making shots in that first half. I think much like we've talked about, you know, with, like, Hunter Dickinson against Missouri or Hunter Dickinson against some of these other teams where teams will shut Hunter Dickinson down in the first half and he comes on in the second half. It was fairly similar, I think, in this one in that – you know, Oklahoma made a concerted effort to really kind of slow down Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickinson in that first half. Furphy provided a spark. KJ Adams provided a spark. And then in the second half, those two took over and did, you know, I mean, there's a reason that they are the two best players on the team. They lead the conference in scoring. They're 1-2 in the conference in scoring right now, which is absolutely ridiculous. You know, Kansas has the top two leading scorers in the conference. They have the top assist guy and they have the top rebound guy. Just ridiculous how, you know, how great they have it in terms of the players that they have. So I do.
And that was the best defensive performance for Dickinson too. Like, 5 blocks, tied a career high, was the best of Kansas. And even just his presence in the paint,
he wasn't happy about that one either. He's like, I think they missed a few of them because it felt like I had a whole lot more.
Right. But that was good to see after even, like, it wasn't that long ago that Yale's 7-footer was, you know, putting him in the spin cycle, taking him off the dribble, and they had to put KJ Adams on him. So, like, I think this was a little bit of a, and especially the way, you know, he saw that UCF block party on Wednesday night as well. And so I think that was as good, you know, we know that Hunter Dickinson can score and we know he can rebound. Seeing him kind of protect the paint like that, which again, his blocks and then the ability to either keep them in play and go or the steals then from it. Like, Kansas had so many transition points that either led to drives, alley-oops, a Furphy three. Like, that's just an added component that I don't expect him to have 5 blocks a game every single night, but it's good to know that he's making his presence felt down there like he hasn't really done yet this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I'm going to circle back to the initial question I had for you because I do think that Johnny Furphy was a much bigger impact than a lot of people probably think. Like, you look at his box score, he only played 19 minutes, he only had 7 points, you know, 2 offensive rebounds, a defensive rebound, and then 2 steals. Like, it's not a stat line that really jumps out to you, but you look at what he did. You know, those two offensive rebounds came very early in the game, and they really extended possessions for Kansas that allowed them to get off to the fast start that we knew that they could and that we were kind of hoping that they'd be able to do. So that was gigantic for them to have Furphy with that kind of energy. And, you know, I think it was striking just how much different the vibe felt. Sure, some of that was them fired up after losing to UCF. Some of that was them being back in the field house and feeling, you know, kind of juiced up because the crowd was there. And let me tell you, with a negative 17 degree wind chill, when you're coming into the stadium, it is awfully cold and not fun. And so when you get in the building, like, I was sweating with how hot it was in that men's game. But it was great to be able to, you know, be in there instead of the cold. And tons of Kansas fans that were just absolutely going crazy there definitely helped. But Furphy brings a kind of energy that we have not seen this team have early. And that set the tone. And even when Oklahoma came back, like, the fact that Furphy was in there and, you know, he sat a little bit because he got two quick fouls in the first half. You know, I do think that there was some issues there as he picked up the fouls. He had to, like, kind of dial back a little bit on his defense, which made it a little, you know, Oklahoma made a comeback between his first and second fouls because I think he was just a little bit more tentative. But you look at the second half when he came back out and could play free again, you know, and then Bill Self left him in after he got that third foul pretty quickly. There was one particular play where Hunter Dickinson came down with a rebound, and it doesn't go on Johnny Furphy's stats, but the only reason Dickinson was even able to get to that was because Johnny Furphy got in the way of the guy, the Oklahoma player that was streaking in and was going to go ahead and dunk it back in. So, you know, you saw very sound defense from Furphy, which I think has been kind of the knock on him, right? Why he hasn't gotten more minutes was because he wasn't as good of a defender as some of the other guys that could be in there, including a Marco Jackson. Jackson struggling with a shot. You know, he actually had his first points of 2024. I'm sorry, his first field goal of 2024 in this game, which is kind of crazy to think about, given, you know, what he was recruited as an outside shooter, and a slasher, and pretty much like he's a scorer. But I do think that it set the tone with Furphy coming in. It's really allowing Kansas to play a little bit freer. I really hope that he keeps that starting spot at least for a while. I wouldn't be upset if Marco Jackson got it back, but, you know, I think Furphy is kind of that glue guy, that energy guy that you really expect to be able to pull everything together.
Well, and I was trying to find this, cause I knew I'd seen it midweek, but, so Evan Maya, you know, who does a tremendous job with analytics here, this is from January 9th, but it's the top 25 5-man lineups in college basketball. And number five on that list is the lineup of Harris, McCuller, Furphy, Adams, and Dickinson. And that's ahead of UConn's lineup of Castle, Johnson, Caravan, Newton, Spencer. It's ahead of Houston's best lineup. This team just is all around, just again, because I think it's, yeah, you can't look at the box score to see Johnny Furphy's worth here. And I think he's starting to get more confident. I know Bill Self keeps telling him to shoot the ball and be more aggressive. And you saw some of that a little bit. The foul situation has got to work. But I think we found that, like, this is Kansas's best five here. And if you can have El Marco Jackson coming off the bench where, you know, he can do like he did, I think Saturday was probably about exactly what you want from Marco Jackson. He drove to the paint and drew fouls. He knocked down a nice jumper. He didn't turn the ball over, got a rebound, like, play good perimeter defense and for 20 minutes a game. And that'll be great. But I think we've seen, like, and the numbers are backing it up here. Like, the best five that Kansas can put on the floor right now includes Johnny Furphy in the lineup. So I would imagine that going down to Stillwater this week, that looks the same. And hopefully that also, you know, that helps El Marco a little bit as a freshman, also trying to get his bearings, like maybe take some pressure off. Maybe he comes, you know, it motivates him to play even better and kind of get things under control. And then you have a true battle of like, okay, who's starting this one? And, or, you know, if you could have a 6-man rotation basically where it's like, hey, it doesn't really matter who's the starter. Like, they're all going to play. Like, I think him and Furphy are going to play about equal minutes anyway. But yeah, I think this is, you're right. Furphy, and hopefully this adds to his confidence level as well. But I think we found that, like, that's the piece right now. That's that 5-man that gives Kansas the best chance to win.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I was going to say let's go ahead and take a look moving ahead, but I don't even think that Oklahoma State or West Virginia have like a unit like UCF did, right? Like that is worth talking about at this point. They're both struggling mightily. They had Oklahoma State getting just absolutely demolished by Iowa State on the road, and sure, Kansas goes down to Stillwater. It's always an interesting place for them to play down there. But I just looking at what Oklahoma State has, I'm not really sure that there's anything that's even worth talking about there. And of course, West Virginia, sure, they had the huge upset win over Texas, but I think you and I have talked about how we think Texas is suspect anyway. And
they should not be that bad for how much talent is on that roster.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. So I think that's going to go
Oklahoma State. The only thing I would say is that they shoot a lot of threes. And when you're in Stillwater with a team that shoots a lot of threes, we've seen this too many times where people go nuts. But the good thing is, like, if you think Kansas has turnover struggles, go ahead and take a peek at the Cowboys because,
they turn it over on 20% of their possessions. One out of every five possessions is a turnover for Oklahoma State. It's ridiculous.
So against against Tulsa, I was looking at this earlier, on December 10th, they had – take a guess at what their highest turnover, just if you didn't look, like take a guess, wild guess, most turnovers on the season, what do you think that number is? And I'll tell you, it was against Tulsa on December 10th.
27.
Yeah, 27.
Oh, really?
I
figured it was like mid-high 20s. I was just like 27. I mean – yeah, it helps that I co-host a podcast on the 10-12 with an Oklahoma State guy, and he's very upset. But no, we never actually talked about that number. I literally just threw a number out there. That's awesome.
They had another 22 turnover game against South Carolina State. They turned it over 19 times against Iowa State. They turned it 19 times against St. Bonaventure. 20 times, or sorry, that was looking at the no, that was 14 times against St. Bonaventure. Like, yeah, if Kansas can, unless Oklahoma goes 11 of 28 from three and Kansas can't make a shot and Kansas turns over again, like Oklahoma State is going to give them chances. And so that's one where it's just like, that was the only thing I was going to call about Oklahoma is like, my goodness, if you thought, and Kansas's turnover problems have been bad this year. That's bad. 27 in a game against Tulsa is rough.
Right. Like literally the only thing that they do somewhat well is shoot the ball at a decent clip. It's not even a great clip, but at a decent clip, but they have to actually be able to shoot the ball first in order for that to actually matter. So I do think it's going to be an easier week for the Jayhawks, but they obviously, as we've seen, you cannot take anything lightly in the Big 12. So it'll be a much needed, I think, simpler task for Kansas going on the road twice. And Bill Self talked about how difficult it is to go on the road for a two-game stretch anyway in the Big 12. I will say I do think that the women have a much more difficult week up ahead than the men do, but I guess we'll see. But that is going to go ahead and do it for us today. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not already, please do go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Podcasting. Subscribe. Get every episode as soon as it comes out. Give us a rating and a review. 5 stars, nice comments would be absolutely fantastic. But if for whatever reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys to get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We are, of course, part of the 1012 Podcast Network over on Sports Social, which is the biggest European sports podcast network that there is. Glad to be partnered with them. But you can find all the great shows for all the teams that we cover here in the Big 12 over on the 1012 network website, 1012network.com. Links to all of those shows. Make sure you guys visit our sponsors, Charlie Hustle, Prize Picks. Great stuff over there. Use promo codes to get some great deals with them. But that is going to go ahead and do it for us today. Oh, I'm sorry. No, also make sure you guys can support the network as well by going over to our Patreon, patreon.com/1012network. That's TEN12 network. Get, you can support for just $5 a month. You can support any of the shows here on the network. But that's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.